No long intros today. AEW Double or Nothing pay-per-view recap. Wake up. Wake up. It's almost 1 a.m. over here. This is how I want to spend my Memorial Day weekend. Staying up wee hours in the morning. Now tomorrow is all screwed up. Now, this was an awesome pay-per-view. We're going to get into it. I want to welcome everyone to your AEW Double or Nothing pay-per-view recap in 60. Yes, we're going to discuss the overall thoughts of this pay-per-view in 60 minutes or less. We just went off the air. CM Punk is your new AEW World, can't use heavyweight, World Champion. Interesting. We'll talk about the crowd during that main event also, because we were live in the chat. And by the way, you know, for our channel members and our Patreons, we ended up doing an AEW Double or Nothing watch party tonight. So another reason why you should be a part of La Nostra Familia. I thought the pay-per-view was great, but the obvious issue is, look, if this is their WrestleMania, go 4-5 hours. Go ahead. Balls out. Go for it. But, you know, the idea that you're going to put this many people on the card, when you realize, when you think about FTR and others that still didn't get on the card, you know, this is just too much. You know, it's funny. Anybody that's my age will remember this. If Harry Slash, a former ECW genius writer with the music, if he's tuning in, he will know what I'm talking about. 20 years ago, when I used to work behind the scenes for the Mass Maniac in USA Pro Wrestling, Dave Meltzer, CM Punk, a lot of wrestlers would always make fun of the Mass Maniac for putting on five-hour marathons, 15 matches on the card. They used to bitch. They used to do shoot interviews and talk about it, ripping him. Oh, fuck those five-hour marathons. And here we got it right, you know, in front of us. Not bad, you know, for indie wrestling when the show starts at 6 p.m. And even if it does go 5 hours, you're out by 11. Here, we're almost 1 a.m., but let's talk about it. Some people live do remember those days. It was a good show. It was a good show tonight, but it's overkill. There was a few matches that absolutely didn't need to be there. And you could see what it is. It's like Tony Khan doesn't have the heart to tell someone, look, guys, gals, you know, I can't put you on this pay-per-view. You'll be on the next one. You know, and it's not just that. Every match has to go long. Jade Cargill versus Anna Jay. We like Anna Jay. Nothing to dislike about her. But that's a match easily should have been a 2-3 minute match at best. But because they got to make it 7-8 minutes, because everybody's got to get a good amount of time in their match, you know, you started to see a lot of holes exposed. There was no business to have Darby Allin and Kyle O'Reilly on that card. I mean, towards the end of the match, they picked it up a little bit. But Jesus, phew, Darby Allin, my God, did you notice what Tony Khan did during that match? We'll talk about it in a little bit. It's not funny, but it is. Because the announcers were like, you know, all right, we're going to get the replay. Let's see the replay. The replay is coming, but they refused to play the replay of him just going right on his head. I mean, look, it was scary. But the worst part about it is, just to make Darby happy, they do it again on the opposite side of the ring. Anyway. By the way, you know, I mentioned this on Twitter. I don't have the details yet. I don't know if it's going to be on eBay. I don't know how she's going to be doing it. But for those that may be interested, Thunder Rosa is going to be auctioning off her outfit that she wore tonight at Double or Nothing. I don't know. I'm assuming it's the in-ring gear at least, maybe her entrance gear as well, and it's for the victims of the shooting that took place in Texas. So I thought that was really, really cool. So when I get more details, because I know some of you are interested, I mean, look, I know I'm not going to win the auction, but I will definitely make a bid or two on behalf of all of us. So that very, very kind of her to do. If I can nitpick for one thing, tonight. I think a lot of you noticed it as well. Adam Cole and Britt Baker. Now, I had to run the table with Ruby Soho because I really thought Ruby Soho needs that one high-profile win, as did Adam Cole. Adam Cole, since coming over from NXT, you know, no championships on the horizon. This would be a pretty cool deal. But I think a lot of you out there also noticed Britt Baker wearing Owen Hart's colors. Adam Cole wearing Owen Hart's colors. And as we teased the last couple of days, was AEW's power couple going to sweep the Owen Hart tournament? And the answer is yes. As we talked about a few weeks ago, they did debut these, I got to be honest with you, they're really nice. These nice looking Owen Hart tournament championship titles. I don't know if, I doubt the wrestlers will be able to keep them and take them home, but it was nice. Martha Hart, you know, look, I'm being lighthearted about this. I'm not criticizing her at all. I have always said, you know, I could never criticize her because I don't know what it's like to lose a loved one, let alone in that, you know, fashion that happened way back when. But, you know, when she was like, you know, I want to give thanks to Pro Wrestling Tees. I want to give it thanks to AEW and Vice of the, you know, Dark Side of the Ring. And I was saying, like, did she win an Emmy or something? Like, you know, she was talking as if she won an award. But, you know, the foundation is obviously extremely important to her. AEW made a very generous donation to that foundation. And even though maybe some of the wrestlers, it didn't fit with them being in a tournament, I know for others, from Jericho to Cole down the line, you know, this tournament actually meant a little bit more. So nice moment to see that. Nice moment to see that. So anyway, we had a couple of new signings with AEW tonight. I honestly did not see these coming. Tonight, I should say. But for those that are not aware, Malcolm Bivens, who is now known as Stokely Hathaway, he is All Elite, and he is in the camp of Jade Cargill. That is something we talked about. We thought he would be the ideal person for that camp. Nothing against Sterling, Mark Sterling, but we should find out that Stokely bought, you know, made an offer that Mark Sterling couldn't refuse. Or maybe the baddies just kick Mark Sterling to the curb. I think that might be the more appealing thing to do. So he is now a member of All Elite Wrestling. I'm excited about this, but I'm not, because we see the pattern, that infamous picture of the little baby that bites the apple. And then if you look in a corner of the room, there's nine other bitten apples. You take one bite and you throw it aside. That seems to happen with a lot of signings that Tony Khan does. Only time will tell what happens with Athena, the former Ember Moon. She is now a member of All Elite Wrestling. And you saw the Acme Insta feud today. It's going to be Anna Jay, Chris Statlander, and Athena versus the baddies. That will be coming to I expect a TV near you and not just a computer YouTube screen. But she is now a member of All Elite, and that's very, very cool. This was more incidental. We knew this was happening. Of course, Wardlow is now All Elite, and that is phenomenal. I will tell you this. Before we mention quickly about MJF, another signing that went on tonight. And I know some of you out there are not familiar of this man, but towards the latter part of the show, after the anarchy in the arena, holy shit, we got a few things to say about that in a little bit. We had a segment with Andrade. Andrade, a little disappointed, pissed off at, you know, what has transpired so far. So he has now a new member and made an alliance. Some of you know this man already. For those that don't, that is Roosh. He and Andrade go back to CMLL. and they do have history together. Roosh, if you're not familiar of his work, do some YouTube research. You will be very impressed. The only thing is, where are they going to put him? How are they going to incorporate him? Are they going to add a third person, and is this going to be another trios group? Only time will tell. But Roosh is now a member of All Elite Wrestling. I tell you, I actually like the pairing. I mean, Jose, the assistant, not needed there. You know, I mean, put these two guys on the poster without, you know, the goofy manager in the background. I'm just saying, you know, it's too many times. That reminds me of Aubrey Edwards, that infamous video clip where she gets in the middle of, what, Britt Baker and Thunder Rosa or somebody like that. But Roosh, very, very impressive guy, now part of AEW. And before we get into the matches, tomorrow after Raw, which will be the 30th of May, even though it's already the 30th, we will talk more about this MJF clickbaiting nonsense that went on in the last 24 hours. Last night, during the Don Tony show, which I aired live between 8 and 10 p.m., this started to break on the news wire about MJF. No show in Fan Fest, something about a plane, you know, tickets being reserved and this and that. And, you know, I started getting annoyed, not at anybody who was telling me live, but, you know, MJF, how many times have we talked about this in the last year, that MJF is AEW's loose cannon Brian Pillman, that MJF is MJF. And yes, when his contract is up, if he gets more money with WWE, of course he will go. That's common sense. He's going to look out what's best for him. Him teasing it right now, you know, this is MJF being in character 24/7, 365. And people yesterday were almost trying to convince me to buy into this narrative that MJF is going on a plane and going home to Long Island. And you just think about the common sense of this. And this is why we threw it out yesterday. First of all, MJF and Wardlow are, you know, a little tight. And MJF knew that if he didn't do the favors for Wardlow and took his ball and went home, that fucks Wardlow up big time. That is just messed up. But what we did say yesterday is that that doesn't look good in WWE's eyes. Why would WWE, whether you think there's a lot of value in MJF or not, why would they turn around and take a guy that did a literally a Jeff Jarrett with China or Ultimate Warrior, if you think about those stories where they were going to hold out and not do a pay-per-view match unless they got more money, you know, why would WWE want to, you know, welcome that in? You know, WWE's making billions. You know, people could make fun about moving the Money in the Bank location, but they did sell 16. Put it this way, WWE sold more tickets for Money in the Bank, even though they had to move it to a smaller venue. They sold more tickets than AEW tonight. And AEW tonight, very proud that they had the biggest audience ever. That is a good thing. But you see, when yourself has a little bit of success, you know, you just want to tell the world, you want to just dance on the clouds. But you try to turn around and you mock others. You know, that's why people need to be a little silent with that stuff. But we didn't buy into the MJF stuff yesterday. I mean, if you, what was terrible about it, and we'll move to the matches now because we're already 15 minutes in, which means we're one quarter of the show done. Really want to challenge myself and get this done in 60 minutes so everybody gets a nice, quick, tight overview. We get out of here. You know, this is something else that's very, very important to me. Every single one of you to tune into my work, I think you want honesty. You know, I do opinions. I'm opinionated. I opine. But you want honesty. And the last thing you want to feel is tricked into watching something or hearing something I say by deceiving you and making something seem like it's not. And last night, as I was trying to get more information myself about the MJF situation, I'm watching people literally doing this, I mean, literally saying that this man quit AEW. Now, look, they took him out on a stretcher tonight. And we've talked about it before. You know, how many times in the last couple of weeks did we compare MJF to a rookie in Major League Baseball? That a baseball player comes into the major leagues, is making the minimum, and then is having an unbelievable first couple of years. Mike Trout, you might remember that a few years ago when Mike Trout first broke into the Angels and making the minimum. And, you know, other players, they've done it as well. What do? They try to renegotiate the deal or they try to add on a couple of years. You know, MJF signed a couple of years ago and took a very low-end deal. MJF now is one of the top players in that company. MJF feels that he is grossly underpaid when you realize how much AEW is dipping for CM Punk, how much they're dipping for other wrestlers that they have brought in. Even lower tier wrestlers are making a lot more than MJF. So MJF feels, look, I think my pay should be upped a little bit. Look at how good the business is doing. He has every right to that. But if you saw the last 24 hours, he's on a plane. He's not on the plane. He isolated himself from the locker room. The locker room doesn't like him. They like him. He's doing this. He's doing that. Nobody fucking knew a damn thing. And people were clickbaiting their viewers, their readers, into something that just wasn't true. It just wasn't true. I didn't buy into it yesterday. And it's terrible. It's terrible to see that level. And what did I finish up yesterday's conversation with? MJF somewhere yesterday was laughing at everybody that was reporting this stuff, clickbaiting it, exaggerating it, claiming this. Now, maybe Tony Khan decides to keep MJF off of TV for a while. Maybe MJF is so upset at how little he's making, maybe he doesn't want to come back. And maybe he ends up leaving, for real. Maybe Tony Khan works out another deal. But, you know, this is the entertainment business. And for people out there to think that Tony Khan, because he wouldn't lie to his roster, that he has to explain to his roster what's going on with MJF. Are you fucking kidding me? I mean, that's one of the most dumbest things that I ever heard. He is a promoter for an entertainment company. And if they turn this into a loose cannon storyline, he doesn't have to give the rundown to his entire roster. And then if there's a few people that are not thrilled about being in AEW, they leak it out to their friends on social media or other podcasts and websites, and they spill the beans and reveal. Come on. I mean, people can't be that stupid. He can't be that stupid. So, all right. Let's talk about this paper. Your Double or Nothing post-show review. Your opening buy-in match was Hook and Danhausen defeating Sterling, Mark Sterling, and Tony Nese. Hook, a little bit acknowledging the crowd, you know, doesn't slap hands and doesn't smile, but he made sure to walk around every part of the ringside area. He looked at the audience, took it in a little bit. Danhausen got a little more offense this time around. Match was mostly gaga. Danhausen at some points getting a little offense, getting beat down. Towards the end of the match, Danhausen gets the hot tag onto Hook. But Mark Sterling, he is not interested. Tony Nese is trying to go for the hot tag for Sterling, Mark Sterling. He doesn't want to get in there. So Hook ultimately takes both guys out with suplexes. He nails a suplex onto Mark Sterling, and he's about to hit the red rum on Mark Sterling, but Danhausen wants to get in. He wants to get in. Hook's about to hit the red rum, but Danhausen wants in. So Hook tags Danhausen in, and all Danhausen does is put his foot on Mark Sterling's chest. 1, 2, 3. Gaga match. Everybody enjoyed it. I enjoyed it. Not every match has to be this clinic. By the way, speaking of clinics, I don't know about you. I got to think about this as we go along these matches. But I thought Thunder Rosa and Serena Deeb First of all, I wish it would have gone a little bit longer. But those two women, it might be my favorite match of the night. If you put aside anarchy in the arena, because that was just, you know, chaos. It was chaos. Ugly chaos. I think that's what Jim Ross called it. I enjoyed it. It went a little bit too long, but I enjoyed it. But I think if you put that match aside, I honestly think Thunder Rosa versus Serena Deeb was my favorite match of the night. You know what I liked about it? Some people are saying it was boring. Look, I respect that. What I liked about that match, and we'll talk about it in detail in a little bit. What I liked about Serena Deeb and Thunder Rosa is you can have a feud with someone and you can have this real deep, you know, dislike for someone, and you can show someone up just by out-wrestling them. You don't always have to involve blood, guts, weapons. You could have a feud with someone and be angry with them and just do a better job in the ring. You out-wrestle your opponent. You embarrass them. You reverse. You this, and they put on a clinic. I really enjoyed that match. I will not be surprised if some people say that was their favorite match of the night. Now, look, by the time we get to the end of the show, as I revisit some of what we saw, because I am tired right now, maybe by the end of the show I changed my mind. But the opening match tonight, MJF versus Wardlow. You know, again, you saw everything that went on the last 24 hours. They put it on first. I thought it was the right way to go. And the story that was told in the ring, was it a great match? No. It was never supposed to be a great match. It was supposed to be all this built-up anger, abuse, frustration, that would torment, that was given to Wardlow for months and months and months, maybe longer than that. And Wardlow just destroyed MJF. MJF tries to take a couple of shortcuts, puts on the ring, the referee sees it. AEW, they take away the weapon. He's pleading for mercy with Wardlow. Wardlow ain't having it. I'll quadruple your pay. Wardlow ain't having it. Wardlow, 5 power bombs to MJF. Puts his boot on MJF. We think the match is over after 5 power bombs, but he takes his foot off it too. Match is still going. Hits powerbomb number 6, powerbomb number 7, and the crowd starts chanting, 8, 8, 8, 8. Not only did Wardlow oblige the crowd and give him 8, he gave him 9, takes the straps off, pulls them down, hits 10, then he pins Wardlow. Pins MJF. Immediately they have the stretcher at ringside. They strap MJF in the stretcher, put a neck brace on him after all the power bombs, and they stretcher him out. I like the stretcher job because that writes MJF off of TV for now. If MJF ends up leaving, if MJF ends up going into negotiations, if MJF ends up doing some type of loose cannon storyline, and shows up unannounced, you know, there's many avenues they can go with this. You know, stretch a job usually is done to write somebody off TV, sometimes temporarily. Think of Mad Cat Moss, or permanently, like Matt Hardy or someone else. You know, so stretch a jobs are important when it comes to storylines. Obviously, it's going to lead to one of those with MJF. I doubt that he's going to be advertised for this Wednesday or next, and he just comes out and cuts a promo about what happened. So Wardlow gets your win, dominant, and then Tony Schiavone comes out, announces that he is officially all elite, and crowd is chanting, "You deserve it." I loved how the crowd was chanting, "You deserve it," to MJF as they were putting him on the stretcher. Let me tell you something. If there was one good thing about what transpired the last 24 hours with MJF, and that is publicity. So much attention. You don't think some people tuned in tonight? I got to see what happens with MJF. You know, I mean, look, dropping $60 out of curiosity with that is kind of steep. Me, what I ended up doing, yeah, I know some people will get mad at me. I don't care. But I get Norton VPN. I pay right now. If you go check it out, I don't make nothing off it. Norton VPN. You get the 1 year subscription for $29 for the entire year. And then what happens is you could buy AEW through Fight. And I paid $19.99 for the pay-per-view. So even with a whole year's worth of VPN service, which is good for privacy online anyway, and then that allows you to buy the pay-per-view. I have nothing against my international friends, but, you know, look at our fucking economy. What am I going to pay $60 for the pay-per-view when I can pay $19? I mean, think about it. So Wardlow gets the win. Now we get to this match. The Elite versus the Delete. The Hardys versus the Young Bucks. And when we did predictions on Thursday, I said this is not going to be Super Card of Honor from 5 years ago. You go back to that match, they used ladders, tables. I mean, there was a couple of things used tonight, but nowhere on the level of Ring of Honor, Super Card of Honor. Now, they had Caprice Coleman doing commentary, which was a nice little touch. Give it a little Ring of Honor vibe to this. But this was kind of sad. Now, yes, some people are reporting that Jeff Hardy was knocked for a loop. He had his bell rung. I'll be honest with you. Anyone out there think that anybody online talked to Jeff Hardy right after the match and Jeff said to him on text message or something, yeah, I got my bell rung. I think these are people trying to guess why Jeff looked the way he did. Now, as I said that night that he walked out of the WWE house show match, I'm saying it again here. There was no signs that Jeff Hardy was inebriated. There was nothing whatsoever, and I don't even want that thought to get in anybody's head. But Jeff Hardy was just out of it for long periods of time. There was one point to give him some air outside the ring. The referee was pretending to fix Jeff Hardy's boot. Now, people at ringside, I had a few friends that were texting me and telling me a couple of things, but they were just buying time. Yes, his bell could have been run. But if you even look at some of his spots, you know, it takes him a lot longer to do what he does. And if you look closely at the grunts and the grimaces and the way that he moves, you know, I hope people realize you are witnessing in front of your eyes right now the beginning of the end of Jeff Hardy's in-ring career. The man has killed his body for our entertainment for way more years than I think we would have ever thought. And, you know, tonight's match was a fun match, but it was nowhere close to what their match was only 5 years ago. You know, early on in the match, the Young Bucks countering a lot of what the Hardys were doing. You know, if you go back and you watch it a little bit, he went for a move on the side of the apron, and you had Nick Jackson just standing there waiting for it. And, it, you know, you used to see these hits simultaneously. You saw a couple of times tonight. There was even an awkward moment where Matt Hardy and I think Matt Jackson were outside the ring. And they were waiting for Jeff Hardy to do a dive. I mean, just everything about the match, it just was a lot slower and too many setups. And people were, you know, look, he's earned all of our respect. And yes, you could compare it to any sport you want. I grew up in the Jordan era. And when you saw Jordan towards his latter years, it was sad to see, you know, him not be, you know, the 50-plus point scorer every game. In baseball, you see some of your favorites, they get into the final years of their career, and they don't do what they used to. You get signs of, you know, of life here and there, but in the end, they're nowhere near what they used to. And this match tonight was a fun match. You know, the Hardys ended up getting the win. You know, Jeff with the Swanton on to Matt Jackson. But it was, you know, even after that, Jeff immediately ran into the crowd. And, you know, that looked a little off. And then he came back in to the ring and celebrated. But this match As we said on Thursday, we expected it to not be on the level of Supercard of Honor. But this really, I mean, I think those crazy matches that we saw early on in Jeff Hardy's AEW career, I think some of those are now long gone. Sure, I will. I think you will see Jeff Hardy on occasion do one of those crazy spots, but you could see there. This pay-per-view match tonight should have been on an episode of Dynamite, and one of the matches that he did on Dynamite should have been on the pay-per-view tonight. It was a fun match, but at some points it was a little sad to watch. But again, I want to stress no signs whatsoever of anything. With, you know, substances. I want to make that clear. It's just age. It's age and your body breaks down. Okay. Jade Cargill beating Anna Jay to retain the championship. Oh, by the way, before we even had the buy-in, the Acclaim came out with the Ass Boys, you know, just welcoming the crowd. You had Max Caster doing his rap, and then the Ass Boys are trying to welcome everyone, and they get the pay-per-view name wrong, and then Anthony Bowens does it. Those guys are over. And I'm really starting to become fans of Billy Gunn's sons, the Ass Boys. They're onto something. They're onto something. It's going to take a lot more time, but they're onto something. Jade Cargill versus Anna Jay. Honestly, I know some people out there are not going to be, you know, honest about this. This match was kind of a mess. If you go back and you look at it, you know, you got Anna Jay setting up spots and she's literally just standing there waiting for something to happen. I'll give you a really good example in a moment. She had Jade crotched and Jade is just bent over, crotched down, waiting for Anna Jay to hit a move on her. Then there's a moment where Anna Jay is outside the ring. Kiera Hogan tries to interfere. So Anna Jay grabs Kiera Hogan's head to do a DDT. You go back and watch it. Red Velvet, I'm sorry for my audio only friends, but Red Velvet literally did this. She runs up to Anna Jay and puts her head down like, me too, it's like children. Like, hey, I got two sons. Hey, I'm going to DDT my son right now. And then my other dopey schmuck son runs over. No, me too. Me too. Look, me too. And she DDTs them both. Awful. And don't give me this Tony Khan stuff. Oh, you know, people, you know, should be able to make mistakes and improve. And they say, that's fine. Not when I'm paying $60. Not even on Elevation or Dark. That shit should be edited out. It's embarrassing. Then you have another spot. Sterling Mark Sterling comes out with a crutch, throws the crutch in the ring. The dopey referee sees it and acts like he doesn't see it. Anna uses the crutch, gets a two count. John Silver comes out, hits a brainbuster on Mark Sterling outside the ring. And while this happens, Jade Cargill hits a finisher for a two count. So after she gets the two count, you go back and I don't even know what the hell it was. Jade Cargill runs from the ropes and runs up to Anna Jay. And I guess Anna Jay was supposed to grab Jade Cargill's head and throw her down. And Jade Cargill literally throws herself into the lap of Anna Jay so Anna Jay could hit the Queen Slayer. I mean, shit like this is just embarrassing. Then you have Jade Cargill. She throws Anna Jay into the corner. Anna Jay attempts something. We don't know what it is, but Jade stops it. Then Anna Jay is sitting on the top rope. Jade Cargill climbs the top rope. And Anna Jay's trying to get out of there. And she's elbowing Jade. But if you look at Anna Jay, Jade is not even holding her. If Anna Jay wanted to get out of it, all she had to do was just jump off the rope. It was a mess. It was a mess. So anyway, Malcolm Bivens comes down the rampway. Anna Jay gets distracted seeing Malcolm Bivens. Hi, Malcolm. And She's distracted. Top rope avalanche by Jade Cargill gets the win. Before the baddies could attack Anna a little bit more, Chris Statlander comes out. Stare down with Chris Statlander and Jade. And then this leads to Athena, the former Ember Moon, comes out. There's a stare down 3-on-3. The baddies back down. And that's how this match comes to an end. Something that put a smile on my face today, because we talked about this, and we even talked about it on Thursday. Buddy Matthews. We've talked about it several times in the last couple of months. You look at Malachi Black with all the tattoos. You look at Brody King, similar look to Malachi Black. And then you see this really nicely groomed, physically fit specimen, Buddy Matthews. He doesn't fit in with the House of Black with the look. And we said a few times, you know, put face paint on or something. Something to make them look a little more symmetrical. And they did tonight. Now, I know that's a kind of a bad-looking picture. But I loved how they dressed them tonight. And even when the Death Triangle came out, Pac was wearing a mask. Half of it was Rey Fénix. The other half was Penta. And I think that was Rey Fénix's kid that came out also for the match. Oh, you know what? No, actually, that might have been Penta. Penta's kid. I don't know. It was one of their kids. But actually, more I think about it, I think it was Rey Fénix's kid. This match was awesome. There was one funny moment. And yeah, look, we give a little bit of heat to Brody King for his remarks about Edge. But Brody King, there was one point where everybody dove outside to the ring, outside to the floor. Brody King attempted to dive over the top rope outside to the floor as well. And unfortunately, because he doesn't have the push-off with his legs, when he went over the top rope, he literally landed ass butt crack on the edge of the ropes, the apron. I'm sure that's going to be replayed 1,000 times today. There was some wild moves during this match. Penta with a crazy Canadian destroyer on the outside of the apron onto Buddy Matthews. The only problem I had with that move is that he recovered almost immediately. I don't think people took note of that. And wait till we get to Ruby Soho. It was something that I noticed that pissed me off a little bit too. So Malachi Black, towards the end of the match, he's surrounded by the Death Triangle. Now, if you've watched Penta, Rey Fénix versus the House of Black in the past, or Pac, or any of the combination, you know what these guys do. Buddy Matthews and Pac were, to me, the stars of this match tonight. They were hitting crazy-ass moves. The problem with this match is what we worried about on Thursday. You're halfway through this match, and you realize what type of match you get here. And you don't necessarily root for one side or the other. You know, you do get these matches sometimes that you just love the work. And you don't care which side wins necessarily. And that's what this felt like tonight. Then halfway through the match, I was like, oh, shit. This match may end because of Julie Hart. Because, you know, obviously this is a storyline that should have been completed 6 months ago. But sure enough, we get towards the end of the match. Pac hits a low blow on Malachi Black, climbs the top rope to hit his 450, but the lights go out. And then when the lights come back on, it is Julie Hart. She spits the mist in the face of Pac, and the House of Black get the win. So now Julie Hart is a member of the House of Black. Look, I am not saying this to criticize her. I hope people don't get upset what I'm about to say. But you could put a little face paint on her. She looks like a child next to the House of Black. Like, you would think maybe somebody that looks more physically intimidating. You're somebody that just, you know, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, why? Now, this could be the opposite where they all control Julie Hart, where Julie Hart may be I don't want to say abused. Obviously, they're not going to do that in the storyline in 2022. But, you know, if she is going to be any type of, I don't know how that's going to fit. Just because, you know, Malakai Black spit the mist in her forehead 6-7 months ago doesn't mean that it makes it a good storyline. I don't care how many weeks it's been built up. You know, breaking away from the Varsity Blondes, okay, fine. But I don't know how this is going to turn out. So we will see. Yeah, she's 20 years old, Sam. But still, she looks like a kid. And, you know, how does that fit in the House of Black? Why? Because she's wearing all dark and has a serious look on her face and has a little bit of paint on her eye. You know, that's like playing Halloween. You know, the character, the attitude, you know, it's got to be a lot more. If she just comes out there just looking like a cute piece of deadwood tree in the corner, a house plant, you know, the house plant with the House of Black, I don't think it's going to work. There's got to be a character behind it. And just looking stoic, wearing black, you can do that with anybody. But the match itself was excellent. Excellent match. A little bit of a train wreck, but excellent match. Okay. Adam Cole defeating Samoa Joe to win the Owen Hart Foundation tournament. As we said earlier, Adam Cole wearing Owen Hart's pink colors, little reminiscent of 1994 King of the Ring. Mike Chioda, special guest referee, which I loved. Early on in the match, I don't know if you picked up on it, Samoa Joe favoring his left shoulder. But he had no problem with his right shoulder because he hit a vicious clothesline on Adam Cole. But here comes Bobby Fish. Bobby Fish early on snaps Samoa Joe's arm against the rope. Gets a little upper hand. Adam Cole goes for the boom. But even when you go back and you look at it, when Adam Cole went for the boom, he literally like went flipped over, like went over and above Samoa Joe's head. I mean, it just, the cameras, I blame it on the camera work than anything else. Goes for a clothesline too. Instead of trying to attempt a clothesline, he did one of these. Instead of going like this, he went like this. Like, of course you're going to miss him when you go over his head like that. But what ends up happening is Bobby Fish tries to interfere again. This time he fails, but he distracts Samoa Joe enough. So Adam Cole hits two super kicks on Samoa Joe, lowers the boom on Samoa Joe, gets the win. So pretty quick match if you go back and watch it. I could have done without Bobby Fish interfering. Again, you're like, why didn't anybody try to help Kyle O'Reilly, you know, the other day, if you really think about it. But so Adam Cole is your winner. Now, they didn't do the ceremony yet because they were going to wait until they awarded the winner of the Women's Owen Hart Foundation Tournament. And you remember what I said on Saturday. You know, when Ruby Soho got booed out of the building on Rampage, you know, there was no mention of the Owen Hart tournament in a promo at all. You know, I don't know if you noticed this tonight. This was very smart on AEW's part. Ruby, first Britt Baker comes out, and Rich Ward of Fozzy, Daphne's ex-husband, God rest her soul, he did a guitar solo for Britt Baker's entrance theme. So Britt comes down the rampway, fine. Then we get Rancid perform Ruby Soho's theme. And let me tell you something. I don't listen to Rancid music, but Rancid killed it. I mean, people that I know that are into like hardcore dance music, they're like, wow, this is pretty fucking good. They killed it, but they went straight to the match. Thought that little thing, whoever came up with that idea was brilliant. To avoid the crowd even getting the opportunity to boo Ruby with an introduction, when Rancid finished their song, they hit the bell and they started. And I said, that is good. That was very smart on their part. Rancid, tell you, one of the best live wrestling performances of all time. And I'm not exaggerating that. That's how good it was if you didn't see it. So early on in the match, We got equal chance on both sides. Let's go Ruby DMD. Let's go Ruby DMD. Again, another fairly short match, in my opinion. One thing I'm fed up with seeing, and we must have had it in at least 8 or 9 matches tonight, the slugfest. Boo! Yay! Boo! Yay! Oh, my God. They did it with CM Punk 2-3 times. They did it with Ruby and Britt Baker. They did it with Samoa Joe and Adam Cole. They did it with Darby Allin and Kyle. They must have did it like 9-10 matches tonight. You know, do it once, do it twice. It's just... That's one thing. I remember we were all getting sick and tired of Tope Suicidas being done by everybody. This I'm kind of fed up with. But something that happened during that match that really annoyed me. You go back and you watch that match. There was 2 different times that Britt Baker hit a super kick on Ruby. And Ruby no-sold it. Literally 3 seconds later, Ruby is hitting her moves like the super kick didn't even happen. It happened 2 times in a row. You go back and watch it and you'll see what I'm talking about. So Britt Baker hits the curb stomp 2 7/8. Wasn't necessarily a 3 count. Wasn't like what happened with CM Punk and Hangman Page that pissed off a lot of people. Britt Baker goes to put on the glove, almost hits the lockjaw, but instead Ruby reverses it into a pin attempt. Ruby ends up getting the sharpshooter on Britt Baker. Britt Baker ends up getting to the ropes. And then we get the dueling chance once again. But out of nowhere, Ruby goes for the fruit roll-up, gets a 2 count. Britt Baker goes for the fruit roll-up, gets the 3 count. And one thing I thought was a little odd is Britt Baker helped Ruby get up after the match, almost like a little sign of respect. You go back to Ruby's promo at Rampage. This is a receipt waiting to happen. So angry, she forgot it was the Owen Hart tournament final. And to see even that little sign of respect, I just thought didn't make sense with what this was supposed to be. You know, good chain wrestling at times, but I think a lot of what we saw didn't match what this feud was supposed to be. So Britt Baker ends up winning the match. And then, as I showed you earlier, Martha Hart is on the stage. Tony Schiavone awkwardly introduces Adam Cole as the winner because we know their history. And Tony Schiavone hugs Britt Baker. Martha Hart cuts an emotional speech, awards each one of them of a belt, shows the Owen Hart cup. And Martha, the way she cut a promo, it sounds like we may see something again next year. Very nice moment. Very nice moment. You know, it's nice to see that. I didn't feel that there were any jabs towards WWE, you know, and the crowd didn't do that either. It was just, look, paying a little tribute to Owen. But if we're going to criticize anything, it was just I found it very interesting to see that Adam Cole and Britt Baker were wearing Owen Hart's colors in their matches. So, all right, here's where we get some hot messes. This was a hot mess. This match didn't belong, wasn't needed. Now, the stipulation is a little bit different when we talked about on Saturday. The stipulation was that if Sammy Guevara and Frankie Kazarian lose, they cannot face Scorpio Sky for the TNT title. But once Scorpio Sky is no longer the champion, Kazarian and Guevara can fight for the TNT title again. That's something I think was not very much clarified before, but that ended up being a 6-person, I guess, first ever mixed trios match, first ever, I believe, in AEW. Paige Van Zandt was her in-ring debut. She didn't do too bad. You know, the Michinoku driver that she hit was a little scary because it almost looked like Ty almost landed on her head. But Paige Van Zandt, I got to give her credit. She did pretty good. This match, to summarize it, Sammy paying too much attention to Ty Conti. Kazarian getting pissed off at Sammy Guevara. Pay attention to the match. At one point, Sammy's outside the ring, you know, like holding Ty and giving her a kiss. They're playing tonsil hockey at the beginning of the match. And Frankie Kazarian is, you know, yelling at Sammy. And then towards the end of the match, Frankie Kazarian goes to tag himself in, and he slaps Ty Conti really hard. Ty Conti here is screaming, even though there was really nothing. So ultimately, Ty Conti enters the ring, and she's having a, you know, stare down, jawjacking with Frankie Kazarian. Sammy Guevara goes to super kick Frankie Kazarian in the back of the head, but Frankie moves out of the way, and Sammy super kicks Ty Conti inadvertently. So what ends up happening is Sammy is busy trying to attend to what happened with Ty. Scorpio Sky hits the TKO on Frankie Kazarian, and they get the win. And they get the UFC titles back as well. So that's pretty much the gist of that match. It was not good. Did not need to be on the show. Another match that did not need to be on the show. We talked about it a little bit before. Darby Allin losing to Kyle O'Reilly. Little bit surprised at Kyle O'Reilly getting the win. Crowd was dead for the majority of the first half of this match. They picked up the pace a little bit later on, but early in the match, Darby Allin's mouth was busted open a little bit, and Darby goes for a tope suicida, like I said earlier, and his leg hit the rope and he fell straight down. The announcers asked for the replay. They said, oh, let's check out the replay, and we don't get one. They said it again, and we're going to show it, and it didn't happen. And you could picture it. If you go back and you listen to the announcers and they don't show the replay, you could picture Tony Khan in the back. I'm not playing that replay. No, I'm not. No, I'm not. So Kyle O'Reilly goes to the opposite side of the ring. Darby Allin goes for another one. So this time Kyle grabs him and puts him in a submission move. They replayed that three or four times because it looked much better. They never replayed the first one. So what ends up happening? We get another fucking slugfest in the middle of the ring. Boo, yay, boo, yay. Kyle grabs Darby Allin's chain, wraps it around his neck, and pulls backwards, which actually looked pretty cool. Pulls Darby Allin backwards, hits a TK on Darby Allin, only gets a one count. Hits another TK on Darby Allin, this time gets a two count. Hits a third TK, goes up to the top rope, hits a diving knee, and Kyle O'Reilly gets the clean pin on Darby Allin. Very, very surprised, but again, match that was not needed on the show. Not needed at all. This match, Thunder Rosa, could have given her five more minutes, and you could have gotten rid of one of these other matches. This was a clinic. I mean, nothing about it really stood out. They didn't have any crazy ass spots, but again, what I loved about it is, you know, a lot of people think when you have a heated rivalry with someone, a heated match, a lot of anger, that you have to break rules, punch, kick, bleed, you know, use weapons to get your point across. When two women like this are ring generals, just out-wrestling your opponent is embarrassing and intimidating enough. You humiliate your opponent by out-wrestling them, and that's what we got tonight. The match was very even. Thunder Rosa gets the win with the Fire Thunder Driver. Excellent match. I just wish it would have went a little bit longer. Soulfly thinks they placed the match in a bad spot. I don't think so, because it followed Darby and Kyle O'Reilly. So I think the fans were looking for something uplifting. The prior match was kind of dead. The crowd was kind of dead for that. But this match was off the charts. And I'm telling you, for all you Jim Cornette fans out there, don't be surprised if Jim Cornette says this is his favorite match of the night. It was very good. And it just goes to show you that you don't have to do all this crazy, memorable spots to have a outstanding match. Told a nice story. Yeah, we'll get to Keith Lee in a moment. I definitely want to wrap up these other matches, because we got this one. We got three matches left. We're not doing bad. The intro was 5 minutes, so we're about 50 with the recap, so we're almost done. Okay. They obviously knew that this match was going to be nuts. It did go too long. It was still excellent, outstanding. I don't know why AEW is so insistent on making us forget about Stadium Stampede, but that seems to be the case. Justin Roberts is in the ring, and he's about to announce the next match, Anarchy in the Arena. Instead, he looks at the center camera, and he says, ah, this shit's going to hit the fan. And it was just funny the way he did it. So my only problem with this match is that Eddie Kingston and Chris Jericho had almost no brawling or interaction until the very end. Most of this match, it was Jericho and Moxley. It was Bryan Danielson and one member of 2.0. It was Santana and Hager, or Eddie Kingston and Daniel Garcia, because you had them brawling all throughout the building. Two were in the concession stand. Eddie Kingston ended up in one of the elevators, the commercial elevators. This was a wild, wild brawl. Now, the funny thing about it was they tried to give you a little Natural Born Killers ECW vibe when New Jack used to come out with the gangsters and you'd have Natural Born Killers blasting in the speakers. I used to DJ. And, you know, a little piece of advice for Tony Khan, and I can't believe that they didn't even do this. They decided to play Wild Thing for about 10 minutes, 8 minutes, let's say. And, you know, when you're a DJ and you want to extend a song, you know, you will get to the second or third chorus and you'll splice in the first chorus, or you'll just go back to the beginning and it all blends together nicely and it just sounds like a long 10-minute version. They actually started to let the song fade away. And then they played it again. The crowd popped for it because, like, hey, we got it again. But it was just like, how do you screw that up with music-wise? Just splice and add and, you know, you make a 12-inch extended version out of it. But, again, this was not Natural Born Thrillers, but it was Wild Thing. And it played for about 8 minutes until Chris Jericho, they said he broke the soundboard. But in actuality, I guess he just unplugged it because the entrance music was fine for the rest of the night. But we have the wild brawl. Kingston is brawling mostly in the back. Bryan Danielson is brawling in the aisle. Santana Ortiz put Jake Hager through two tables at ringside. Daniel Garcia with a vicious-looking pile driver on the ring steps. And Tony Schiavone name-drops the Tupelo concession stand brawl from 1979 that we've always talked about in the past. And then Schiavone later on says that Anarchy in the Arena has trumped Stadium Stampede. So we get a wild brawl with Jericho and Moxley. Jericho attempts a Walls of Jericho onto Moxley while standing on the table, but the table collapses. Bryan Danielson with some vicious yes kicks to Jake Hager. Then Moxley, you see him loosening up the cable for the top ring rope. And he literally takes apart the top ring rope. And I'm saying to myself, oh, these wrestlers later on are going to love this. So he loses it, takes it off, and he's using the corner, the metal structure for the ring rope as a weapon. Daniel Garcia and Eddie Kingston are brawling inside an elevator. Santana lays out Daniel Garcia, and they lay out Matt from 2.0 onto tables. Santana Ortiz bring out a ladder. They climb the top of the ladder and they put both guys through tables. But Santana Ortiz kind of non-existent towards the end of the match. So Moxley brings out a barbed wire board out from under the ring, which would play a factor later on because Jake Hager ends up throwing Moxley into the barbed wire board. And Moxley was caught up in this board for the majority of the end of the match. We start getting guys back into the ring. Jericho sprays a fire extinguisher in Moxley's eyes, and it looked like for a moment, it legitimately burned them a little bit. But towards the end of the match, we got a couple of guys back in the ring, and Eddie Kingston comes back. Eddie Kingston walks back to the ring with gasoline. And meanwhile, what's happening is, before the barbed wire spot, Moxley's got the triangle choke on, I think, Jake Hager. And Bryan Danielson had the lapel lock on Jericho. So as they have the submission moves on these two guys, Eddie Kingston is walking back to the ring with gasoline. One of those little, like, 2-gallon red little gasoline plastic tanks you could buy. And he hits the ring. Now, obviously, it's water. But he starts dumping it on Jericho to simulate that he's going to light him on fire because of the fireballs. And Bryan Danielson is getting hit with this gasoline as well. So Bryan Danielson flips out, and he starts brawling with Eddie Kingston. And what ultimately ends up happening is Jake Hager whacks Daniel Bryan from behind with, I guess, a bat or a little lead pipe or something. Jericho hits the walls of Jericho, and Jake Hager at the same time has the cable from the ring choking out Bryan Danielson. Now, they said he passed out from the moves, but I don't know how you pass out and you're still trying to, like, grab the cable. So they defeated Santana, Ortiz, Kingston, Danielson, and Moxley. It was wild. I mean, I didn't look at the exact time, but it had to have gone at least a half an hour. Way too long for tonight. If that would have went off the air with that, I would have been fine with it. But it did go a little bit too long. But I think coming out of this now, Eddie Kingston and Bryan Danielson seem to be a good possibility to happen. So Andrade announces his newest business partner, Rush, as we said earlier. We have Scorpio Sky and America's Top Team in the back touting their success from tonight, their win. And here comes Dante Martin. Maybe Sammy can't challenge for the title, but I can. So we're probably going to see a Scorpio Sky, Dante Martin feud coming up. So now we go to the three-way tag match. And we're going to start bringing this home because we're running close to an hour now, minus the intros and earlier. Jurassic Express retaining their tag titles, beating Keith Lee and Swerve Strickland, and Powerhouse Hobbs and Ricky Starks. I was really hoping that Powerhouse Hobbs was going to get some gold. I have no problem with Jurassic Express. I still feel after 3+ years that Luchasaurus does not seem to have improved all that much. He does hit some spots, but if you look very closely, sometimes it is a hot fucking mess. Something happened in the match tonight where Jim Ross, I even think, said, like, you know, I don't even know what to call that. But the one thing that I enjoyed about this match more than anything is something that you see now that was missing, that was absent in WWE, even a little bit in NXT. And that is Keith Lee just coming across like he's having a good time. Animated tonight, charismatic. You had one move where Swerve Strickland jumped off the top rope, ended up pushing off of Keith Lee's back and does a flip onto Jurassic Express outside the ring. Keith Lee just looks like he's having a good time. You know, I know a lot of people were ragging on his weight. It seems like he's dropped a little bit of weight. You know, I think that flip over the top rope tonight was extremely important for him to show everyone that he could still do it. But you just look closely. Keith Lee looks like he is having a great fucking time. Unfortunately, it doesn't equate to gold. Because what's ended up happening towards the end of this match, a lot of people thought that Christian Cage was going to turn. It did not happen tonight. Ricky Starks tries to hit Jungle Boy with a championship belt. Christian stops him. At one point, Ricky Starks then throws Christian into the ring steps. And Jungle Boy is tending to Christian, and Christian is like, go in the ring. Don't worry about me. Go in the ring. And Jungle Boy gets caught by Ricky Starks, and we're thinking, holy shit, could Starks and Hobbs actually win this? And maybe that's where, you know, maybe Christian turns, but no, we only get the two count. Starks nails Jungle Boy a second time, two count. Hobbs takes out Luchasaurus. Strickland takes out Hobbs. Luchasaurus inadvertently almost hits Jungle Boy. Keith Lee and Swerve Strickland hit their finisher on Jungle Boy, but Powerhouse Hobbs breaks it up. And then we get the final. Ricky Starks, this time, hits Keith Lee with the FTW title. Hobbs gets knocked outside the ring. So we got two of the big men out of the rest of this match. Ricky Starks tries to hit Jungle Boy with the FTW title, but Christian pulls him outside the ring. Forget about Ricky Starks now. So now you got Jungle Boy and Swerve Strickland going at it a little bit, but ultimately Luchasaurus and Jungle Boy hit Jurassic Express on Ricky Starks, Swerve Strickland, and they retain the titles. So it was a fun match. It was very rushed because obviously what time we were looking at, but it was a fun match. Enjoyed it. I was really rooting for Powerhouse Hobbs, though. I want this guy to get a title. I think after a couple of years, I think he has earned a championship. It just feels like just when you think that he's going to get pushed to the next level, he's pulled back. I don't know. So now we go to the main event. And honestly, everyone, if you are an AEW fan, and you are very honest and sincere, and you don't have any qualms with giving constructive criticism, then you would agree with what I'm going to say. This main event was a little bit of a mess. The crowd early on, I noticed something, and Excalibur even brought it up, which made me feel good because I was chatting with a few people online during the main event. And what was happening, which was a little bizarre, is you have the crowd loud at the top of their lungs. Let's go Hangman CM Punk. Let's go Hangman CM Punk. But what was weird is you got these loud CM Punk chants. CM Punk lands a little offense. And the mixed reaction turns into loud boos. Okay, fine. The crowd picks up. They notice that CM Punk and Hangman Page are trading flurries of offense. What I mean by that is CM Punk hits a few moves. Hangman Page is laid out. Crowd reacts to it. Then Hangman Page hits a few moves. CM Punk is laid out. Crowd reacts to it. And it didn't make sense because you would hear the crowd chanting at the top of their lungs, cowboy shit, cowboy shit. And then he would hit a couple of moves and the crowd would give loud boos. And it seemed like the crowd was going a certain way because they thought they were dictating, they were helping the story. And Excalibur even acknowledged that. And he says, you know, something strange with the crowd that they seem to be. And then I think it was Shivani that said he called it the 50-50 audience. You go back and watch it, and you'll see exactly what I'm talking about. And it was a little bit of a mess. I think a little bit too much of CM Punk trying to hit the buckshot lariat. Even though Hangman Page hit a GTS that was really nice, I mean, this was a mess. CM Punk tried twice, two times in a row, to hit the buckshot lariat, and his leg buckled. It did not look like that was scripted. Because at one point, he was looking at the crowd and kind of like sarcastically smirking, like, yeah, I fucked up. The second time he did it, he was holding his knee a little bit, I think trying to give the perception that, you know, in storyline, his knee was out. But, you know, they tried to hit a few moves. I mean, Hangman Page with a beautiful moonsault outside the ring. But, you know, it just, it fell flat. In a lot of ways, I think the fact it was 12:30 in the morning, I think, you know, you got a five and a half hour show. You know, these guys are waiting until the wee hours of the morning to do what they do. You know, it does take a lot out of people. It's not like they're just lounging or sleeping and then just wake up, you know, have a cup of coffee, stretch a little bit, and then have your match. You're sitting around back there 5 hours plus all day long getting ready, practicing. So what ends up happening is towards the end of the match, we get a flying lariat by Hangman Page for a two. Tony Schiavone, a little annoying during this match also. All Hangman Page was doing was throwing CM Punk outside the ring. And every time he did that, Schiavone's like, you know, he's got a lot of disdain for CM Punk. I'm like, motherfucker, he's just throwing him outside the ring. He's not like doing a lot of, you know, anything else. Just, it felt like a lot of forced narrative that didn't need to be. So we get the slugfest in the ring once again. CM Punk with a high knee, then a bulldog, then a neck breaker for a two. Punk climbs the top rope. Hangman knocks him to the floor. Hangman with the beautiful moonsault, but favored his knee just for a split second. Punk attempts those two buckshot lariats, fails both times. Page then hits the Jedi, and the referee fucked up. I think CM Punk fucked up. The referee counted one, two, and it was three. CM Punk didn't kick out quick enough. But the ref had to stop anyway because that wasn't the finish in a match, and the fans were booing big time. And, you know, JR's trying to cover it up. The fans are liking this and that. It was a major screw up. High-profile matches like that, especially when you're missing buckshot lariats and you're tripping over here. I mean, they're, you know, they're humans, they make mistakes. But it was one after the other, after the other, after the other. And early on in the match, the crowd was booing just to go along with what was happening in the ring. Later on, they were booing because it was a little bit disappointing what we were watching. So Punk gets thrown over the timekeeper's table outside the ring, and Page is yelling, "You'll never take this from me." And then Hangman Page, the last time he attempts a buckshot lariat, he starts doing like the Shawn Michaels, stomping the floor, getting the crowd into it. He goes over the rope, attempts the buckshot lariat. His leg kind of gives out a little bit. So CM Punk picks him up, and the referee, Paul Turner, is knocked out. We got no referee. Hangman Page is looking over the referee, and he sees in the corner of the ring his belt. So he walks over with the belt, and it looks like he's going to hit CM Punk with the belt, with the referee out, unconscious. And CM Punk gets on his knees, and he's like a dog, like, "Please don't hit me. Please don't hit me." You know, or a wife who's abused, you know, like, "Please, no more." And Hangman Page, torn. What should he do? He's got the belt. CM Punk is like this. The referee's knocked out. And the motherfucker throws the belt on the floor. "I can't win like that. After this whole feud and everything set up, I can't win with a belt shot." So he tries a buckshot lariat one more time. CM Punk catches him, hits the GTS. Paul Turner, ironically, is awoken, hits the three count. CM Punk is your heavyweight champion. No pipe bomb. Some people thought we were going to get pipe bomb time. I'm kind of glad we didn't because it's already extremely late. My God, it's 2:00 in the morning here. And we end up going slightly over an hour if you include the intro and everything. But CM Punk is your new champion. I did not like a lot of this main event match. They worked hard. I think the excessive buckling with the buckshot lariats got a little bit tiresome. You know, after this heated feud and the hatred and this and that, and then you throw the belt down. I mean, you know, I understand, you know, Hangman Page's character and everything like that. But if you're going to have morals that deep, then you shouldn't be doing storylines like they are in AEW. Because in the end, you know, the crowd dislikes this even more. And look, a lot of people are not going to be honest. They can say, oh, the match was awesome and this and that. It told the story and this and that. But no, I think it was pretty sloppy for a main event. But overall, again, look, you get 13 matches, 50 people wrestling. Again, you could pair that WrestleMania Backlash. WrestleMania Backlash had 16 people perform. Tonight we had 50. Over three times the number of people. So you get this much, you know, it's going to be impossible to not enjoy it. I just feel there were a few matches that shouldn't have been. On a scale of 1 to 10, I give this pay-per-view, I would give it a solid 7.5, 8, maybe. The anarchy in the arena was just crazy, wild. I mean, I give credit for the camera work because that is very, very difficult to do live. I mean, you're not just having two people brawl. You're not just having four people brawl. You're having 10 people brawl. So you have five sets of cameras going around, and you got somebody in the production trying to keep things in sync. So, you know, but that, I think, went a little bit long as well. I give it a 7.5 out of 10. You know, if the, again, if this is their WrestleMania and that's why it's 5 hours, fine. But it's not their WrestleMania. And it feels to me that this is a case where Tony Khan just feels guilty that he can't tell people, look, you can't be on this pay-per-view. Like, he feels like he's got to have everybody on there. And I think some people that were not on there were probably working indie shows and working elsewhere. This is overkill. It's overkill. But at least they don't do a pay-per-view every single month. But, you know, they really do need to try to condense this a little bit. 50 people on a card is crazy. It's insane. But again, the pay-per-view was good. It was very good. My favorite match of the night, after thinking about it and after going through all these matches, my favorite match of the night, I'm going to stick with Thunder Rosa versus Serena Deeb because it was not complicated. It told the story. They outperformed each other. It made sense. And it flowed really, really nicely. My least favorite match of the night has got to be the mixed trios match. I mean, you know, we picked up before anyone else that Sammy and Ty Conti were heels. Right now, a lot of people are confused. Who am I supposed to cheer in this match? In this match, the only person you could cheer for really is Frankie Kazarian. It's basically Frankie Kazarian, everybody else are heels. And they're trying to push a different narrative, but it isn't working. That match was just a mess. So, all right. Before we get out of here, I just want to give two quick shout-outs. Big Armada. Athena came in 2 years too late. If she came in before the pandemic era, she'd be a main player. Why do you say that? Who came in before the pandemic era and became a major player? Thunder Rosa, Britt Baker. You know, Jade Cargill is their Goldberg. So, no, I mean, there have been other women that have been in that company that are extremely talented. I don't think if Athena would have came in 2 years ago would have made any difference. Thunder Rosa still would have been pushed. Britt Baker still would have been pushed. You got Ruby Soho there now. You got Toni Storm. They do have a lot of very, very high-end talent on the women's side. I'm a little concerned. Chris Statlander is really, really turning it up. Chris Statlander, right now for me, most improved wrestler of the year. I mean, compared to this time a year ago, she is really putting it together. And the more women that are putting it together, the less opportunity for others. I don't know where Athena fits in here, but even if she clicked 2 years ago, I don't see how they would have done anything different. It's very, very hard to tell who is going to make it and who isn't. Because again, you see that, you know, that trend that somebody gets a little bit of momentum and then they ultimately kick ass on AEW YouTube, but then can't crack through on TV, with the exception of like two or three women. There's only about two or three women that make it on regular TV. And Thunder Rosa, look at the last 6 weeks. They have done almost nothing with Thunder Rosa on regular TV. On YouTube, it's much different. But on regular TV, it's pretty lopsided. But again, you don't see any of those people that'll confront AEW about it because how dare they disrespect Tony Khan. I'm a fan of Tony Khan, and I'll keep supporting him, but there are some issues that need to be addressed. King of Games, thank you very much, my friend. He just didn't want to say he enjoyed the show. And yes, if everyone liked the show tonight, hit the like button. Much appreciated as always. So I am going to jet out of here. And what I'd like for you to do is if you have any questions or any comments, any feedback from tonight's pay-per-view, post it in the comment section. I will be crashing. I have to work tomorrow for half a day, but I will spend some time tomorrow responding to everybody's comments. We have a show, obviously, at 11:05 after Raw. We will talk about Raw, and we will talk a little bit more about this MJF stuff, which is just embarrassing, what we witnessed the last 24 hours. It's just flat out embarrassing. And we'll get into whatever, you know, transpires over the next 24 hours. But, you know, the show officially now went an hour and 20 minutes. We spent about 10 minutes in the beginning and about 5 minutes here. So it, the overall recap was close enough to an hour. You know, we had a lot to cover tonight. And I think we were pretty fair in our discussion. So everyone, be well. Get a good night's sleep. Especially for my international friends that are live right now, where it's like 6 a.m., 7 a.m. where you are. I mean, God bless you that you could stay up all night long, you know, to enjoy some wrestling. Because I can't. I won't even do it for porn anymore. So be well, everyone. I'll see you all Monday night, 11:05 p.m. after Raw. Good night.
As far back as I can remember, I always wanted to be a podcaster. For me to live any other way was nuts. To me, those goody-good people who work shitty jobs for bum paychecks and took the subway to work every day and worried about their bills were dead. I mean, they were suckers. They had no balls. If I wanted something, I just took it. I ran everything. I paid the bills. I paid the host. I even paid the masked maniac. Everybody had their hands out. Everything was for the taking. We always called each other good fellas. You would always hear from somebody. You're gonna like Don Tony. He's all right. He's a good fella. He's one of us. But if you're part of my crew, nobody ever tells you they're gonna get rid of you. It doesn't happen that way. There weren't any arguments or curses like in the movies. See, your haters come with smiles. They come as your friends, the people who claim they care the most for your life. And now that's all over. And that's the best part. Today everything is different. There's lots of action. I don't have to wait around for everything like everyone else. Oh, I didn't get the vaccine? Fuck you, vaccine me. Oh, your delivery guy has COVID? Fuck you, feed me. Right after I moved here, I ordered egg noodles and ketchup, and I got spaghetti with meat sauce. I'm no longer an average nobody, while they get to live the rest of their lives like a bunch of schnooks.